The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on Stitcher, iTunes, and NFL.com/Sheck.
S-H-E-K, Sheck.
Today, we will have a great walk down Pigskin Lane. We're taking the gold brick path. We're going to be joined by a Pro Football Hall of Famer in here in a matter of minutes, Mike Haynes, one of the all-time greats, not just at his position, but really one of the more iconic pro football players in my lifetime. And I saw him. I stopped by on my way in today. When I parked my car, I grabbed myself a little lunch. It's a, in case you're curious, it's some noodles, wheat noodles, because I'm a healthy sort, as you can plainly see by looking at me, probably even by hearing me, you can tell that much, and it's vegetables and chicken. It's a healthy choice, that's all. What do you give me the stink eye behind the glass there, Porn Tie? Porn Tie filling in for Black Tie, who's over in Nigeria for a family wedding. Porn Tie, you don't like a healthy choice?
No, it's. I was actually going to go with that, but as we talked about, or kibitz, as you like to say, before we came on air, there's a lot of cheese on the healthy choice today, so I don't know exactly how healthy that is.
Yeah, well, what's done is done. It's going in my belly, and yep. There's nothing that that you or anyone else is going to do to prevent
that
from happening.
I'm going to get it here after the show, so I'm with you.
Now, Porn Tie, you've been doing some good work here. We undertook a great cause, I feel, which is, we need to name this NFL MVP trophy. You know, if I say the Stanley Cup, you know what it is whether you like hockey or not. You can imagine what it looks like. It's iconic. The players skating around with it over their heads. It's a treat for those hockey players to hoist it up over their head. Why? Because the trophy itself is iconic. You know, as opposed to the baseball World, whoever wins the World Series, there are not similar images, or they're not certainly as steeped in the lore of the sport. You don't see the guys running around with the trophy all the time over their head. The most famous appearance the World Series trophy has ever made was when George Costanza tied it to the back of his car and drove it around on a Seinfeld episode in an effort to get fired. You know?
Right.
But you know the Stanley Cup. By the way, I've sipped from the Stanley Cup. I've told that story before. I'll maybe tell it again next week when someone claims that between the Hawks and the Lightning. That's not the point of this story, but it is that the cup is regardless of your hockey fandom, you know it just as everybody knows what the Heisman Trophy looks like. Now, tell me this, Porn Tie. Do you know who John Heisman is?
Yes.
You're going to look it up. I can hear you clickety-clacking on your computer there.
Well, yeah, no. Well, he's the father of football.
It does. All right, fine. But you know what? You know what the Heisman looks like no matter what. True?
Yeah, true.
Even if you're not a college football fan, everybody can strike the pose. Why then does America's most popular sport, pro football, why can we not just bang out who are the MVPs of the last decade? Isn't it a little ironic and sadly so that you're more likely to be able to summon who's won the Heisman Trophy, which, frankly, is not that important a trophy anymore. It doesn't equal a success at the next level like it once did. And yet, we all know who won the Heisman over the last 10 years. Who won the MVP in the NFL, though? That's a little harder to summon for people. Why? Well, I hypothesize it's because it doesn't have a name to it. What's the MVP trophy even look like? People don't really know what that is. I say we rectify that
right. By
giving it a name. Name it after someone, a legend of pro football. For all of time, then, you don't win the NFL MVP. You win the, I don't know, the John Elway Trophy. If
or
that's
Peyton
a good
Manning or Jim Brown.
Something like that. What would be your choice, Porn Tie?
You're a young fella. I would have to go Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning.
Right.
I guess he did win it a lot.
He's won the most. And being also a tendency alumnus, you know,
I gotta
go with the connection.
I didn't put two and two together. Yeah. Either way, listen, if you want to go Peyton Manning, so be it. I asked some of today's biggest stars legitimately. I asked J.J. Watt, Calvin Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, Bruce Arians I talked to about it, Todd Bowles. Who else? Jarvis Landry. Ryan Tannehill. Khalil Ryan. Mack.
Calvin Johnson.
I said him.
Oh, you did? Yeah, no, the list is long and distinguished.
They all weighed in on this. There will be a video for you, or probably by the time you're listening to this, it should be available or close to it.
It's close.
NFL.com, or follow me on Twitter, at Damashek. That's a surefire way to see it, and we'll show you what those guys said. And maybe this will be a thought starter, not just within these four walls here in Studio 66, but for all pro football fans across the land weighing in on this righteous cause. Today, like I say, though, we have a legend joining us, Mike Haynes. I think it's weird that your generation, Porn Ty, doesn't seem to have the, it's, I don't want to say respect, but you're not, you don't swoon for anything that happened pre-1996. Is that fair?
No, because you're basing this off of Black Tie.
Black Tie hasn't seen any movies pre-96.
Or pre-96. 2000.
I know, but a lot of you guys, you're youngsters, and but sitting next to you there is Brandon. Do you guys care about the 70s or the 80s of pro football?
Well, we're not a fair pair to ask because we do work at the NFL.
Well, I don't want to sell anybody down the river, but I have asked employees of the NFL who are younger, guys in their 20s. I have asked them. I've made reference to Drew Pearson, the Dallas Cowboys wide receiver. I've referenced Rocky Blyer, not just a Pittsburgh Steeler great, but an American hero. He went to the war and came back. They said, you may not walk again. Oh, he walked. Nay, he ran. He ran to 1,000 yards even in 1976. That's the era I'm talking about today. When Mike Haynes shows up in here, he was a Patriot in the 70s. He became a Raider in the 80s. He played in Los Angeles, not for the Oakland Raiders, for the L.A. Raiders. I want to get his thoughts on that. I want to play Hall or Nothing, our game where we ask a Hall of Famer if current players or guys just retired, if they belong in the Hall of Fame. I'll be interested to get his thoughts on that. Always fun catching up with him. I think this will be our fourth or fifth time sitting down with Mike Haynes. Always a nice, nice fella. And so be on the lookout for the video of naming the MVP trophy. You could do worse than Mike Haynes. He's one of the top five cornerbacks, I think, in the history of pro football.
Nine-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah, it's funny because in every sport, the guys keep getting bigger and faster, except at NFL cornerback. The two biggest guys I've ever seen play in the position are Mike Haynes and Mel Blount. They were stars of the 70s and early 80s, and I guess Richard Sherman's big-ish, but he doesn't cut that same physical figure. It's a funny sort of paradox there that those guys were bigger than the current guys are.
And it almost seems like it's a new thing that the Seahawks are coming up with these big, lanky corners. Like you said, you bring it up. It's been around forever.
Copycat league, though. You can see now, though, in the last couple of drafts, teams are trying to get the bigger, more physical sort of guy. So anyway, we'll get into all that with Mike Haynes here. Matter of fact, as we speak, speak of the devil, here he comes through the door now. Let's stop down here, Porn Ty, and bring in the great Mike Haynes.
Dave Damashek.
All right. We love to have a good time here in Studio 66, but rare is the occasion that our door is shadowed by an actual Pro Football Hall of Famer, and he wore the gold jacket to boot. Look who it is, everybody. Not just a Hall of Famer, but legitimately one of the all-time greats at his position. Mike Haynes, how are you, sir? Welcome.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I wore the jacket because, you know, there are a few other Michael Haynes's out there. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure you know that this is the real Mike Haynes.
See, that's the thing. That's why I would wear it I would wear it at minimum once a week, maybe multiple times a week, just to remind everyone in the world, those close to me and those who are strangers. Yeah, I got one of these. Do you? You know?
Well, you know, this is a new color, actually. I don't know if you remember when I first got my Hall of Fame jacket, it was more yellow. And guys really didn't want to wear it too much. But with this new color, I like it. Get out there and, you know, get to rub elbows with folks, and it gets a lot of attention.
I bet it does. And I guess that leads me to my first question, which is, can I have the old one?
No, it's probably going to be framed, you know.
But, it is.
But it, oh, yeah.
I'll, I mean, it could be framed and we'll hang it in here. How about that? And then, but it also has a door on it, so once a week I can take it out, wear it around, and then I'll put it back where it belongs.
It's a thought. It's
okay.
Think about it.
Speaking of pro football stuff here in Culver City, that's a part of Los Angeles, so let's jump to that then. I want to talk to you about the Patriots and the great Raider days and all that kind of stuff, but – what about, it's one of the hot button issues, of course, is the return of pro football to Los Angeles. First of all, is it a good football town?
I think it is. Absolutely it is. You're here. You're a you love football.
I love it.
Okay, and so if you want to watch great players in your backyard, what a better place, you know, right here. I think it's a great place. When I was on the Raiders and we had our games here, it seemed like the California crowd would come a little late and leave a little early because there's so many great things to do. But I still think it's a great place to, for football fans, and just got to have the right stadium. It's got to be a nice venue, and L.A. deserves that. So I hope that they can have a team here, if not in the next couple of years at some point. I grew up here in Los Angeles. All I used to have to do was wear my Cub Scout uniform. I used to get in those games for free. And, you know, I love football. I fell in love with football because I could go to those games.
So that makes you a Rams guy then?
I was a Rams guy as a kid, absolutely.
Well, I mean, I feel like that's, you know, it's no secret. It certainly looks like the Rams are headed in this direction. But you sound a little on the fence because the national perception of Los Angeles is, oh, those people, they're too busy surfing or whatever they imagine we're doing out here. I suspect that people will turn out in droves to support a team, you know, to show up here. And by the way, you know, people refer to, well, there were empty seats in the Coliseum on occasion. Well, pro football has achieved a different stratosphere than what it was a quarter century ago. Yeah. Don't you think I think the place would be jam-packed week after week.
Well, you know, the Coliseum was 102, 103,000. I don't think a stadium, yeah, maybe you could get that many people in the stadium here. But, you know, you probably want a little intimate stadium, 65,000, you know, something like that. One, the tickets are going to be so expensive, and football is switching to more television anyway. But if you're going to get inside, you want to feel like you're having an unbelievable experience, and I think that gives you an opportunity for at least an opportunity for that to happen.
Well, you're an LA native, but what was fun about being in LA as a professional? I mean, this isn't just any old time. You guys win the Super Bowl. You beat the Redskins in 18. At the same time, the Dodgers are always in contention. The Lakers are at their height. Was that? Do you have any good yarns you can spin for us? Did you and Magic and Steve Sachs hit the town or anything like that?
Well, we used to hang out, you know, a little bit. But I think the Raiders were world champions in football. And so L.A. seemed to have a lot of wins, you know, with USC and UCLA and the college college sports. And then with the Raiders and the Lakers and the Dodgers. And, you know, it was just an exciting time to be in Los Angeles. And so when the Raiders stop winning, you know, maybe it's not going to be, you know, coming back now may not be the same. There's a lot of Raider fans here, and with the idea of getting signatures in the town of Carson, to get a stadium in Carson, I was over at a lot of those meetings and got to see the Raider fans and talk to the Raider fans. Believe it or not, I think I've bonded with fans a lot more now in retirement than when I played, for sure. And a lot of it is over the Raider team moving back to L.A. or staying in Oakland. There's a lot of fans down here in Los Angeles. There's a lot of fans in Oakland. I think that the fans, and including Mark Davis, would love to stay in Oakland. But if they can't stay, we want them in Southern California, you know. And so right here in L.A. would be a second choice. It's a great choice. Folks from Oakland can come down. Folks from San Diego can come up. It's a great place for the Raiders to move to.
Yeah, that's the nightmares for the Chargers. If the Raiders did it and the Rams, then the Chargers, I mean, that's sort of, they're really going to be doomed, and I think they sense that. But is your heart, as a Raider, but you were an L.A. Raider, not an Oakland Raider,
right,
is your heart that whatever's best for, if that's what Oakland wants to do and stay in the East Bay, that's where your heart is, and you'd rather it be the Rams? I guess that ties back to your youth. That makes sense, huh?
Yeah, well, I feel like, you know, if you're an Angelino, you don't lose. You can't lose, right? If the Raiders come, great. If they stay, great, right? If the Rams come, great. If they don't come, Not so good. If the Chargers come, great. You know, if they stay in San Diego, great. You know, we just need a team here.
I agree.
And it's got to be a killer stadium. I don't think it can be just any old stadium. It's got to be state-of-the-art. It's got to be one that people want to come early instead of come late.
That's right.
You know, and there's a lot of entertainment here in the city. There's a lot of things to do inside of a stadium nowadays. And I think whichever team does finally settle here, they're going to have a great franchise.
Well, what's really most important, because I'm a Steelers fan, born and bred, I think it's better if it's the Rams, because then I can kind of keep an eye on the Rams and kind of root for them and not feel morally bankrupt. If it's an AFC team, I can't say, like, oh, go Raiders. Why, that would be terrible.
Yeah. Oh, I can understand
that. I'd never be allowed back on the banks of the Three Rivers again if I did.
I understand. I actually went on a USO tour with Lynn Swan, went to Kuwait. And we're over there, and all these guys were in their Steeler jerseys. I didn't realize the Steelers had such a fan club, you know. So I understand that. And the only time I've ever lost my cool with a fan was a Steeler fan. It was a playoff game the year that we went to the Super Bowl. Parked our cars basically out where the fans parked their cars, and we just walk into the stadium from there. And a fan recognized that I was one of the players, and he just started letting me have it. And I had to ask the security guards to come over and help, because – I thought something might happen. I was starting to lose my cool. Normally, it's pretty hard for me to lose my cool, but this guy was bugging me too much.
Oh, I don't recall, to be honest, the Oakland-Pittsburgh mid-70s perennial showdowns in the postseason. But I certainly remember those 80 showdowns when you guys were at the height of your powers and Mark Malone and company would come in there and do their best to try and take you down. What is your rooting interest then if – the Oakland Raiders and the New England Patriots were to meet in the AFC Championship game?
I think that's happened.
Well, it did. You know what? That's exactly right. Yeah. I guess it's one of the most famous infamous games, I guess is better to put it that way, the Tuck Rule game. Where was your heart in that one?
I can't lose. You know, that's really the way I feel. I said, like, whatever happens, I don't want anybody to get hurt. You know, I can't lose in that situation. And my career as an AFC player, my whole career, I've rooted for the Steelers too, you know, because I always have rooted for the AFC champion to win the Super Bowl. That's the best team that's representing our conference, and I root for them. And that's the way I used to work in the National Football League, and every year going to the Super Bowl, everybody would say, who do you want? And I said, well, I work in the NFL office now, so I can't really be biased. But if I had to be, I'm rooting for the AFC because it doesn't matter to me. I love all the owners. I love the business. I love the industry, everything about football. But because my 14 years were all in one conference, I always root for that conference.
All right, let's do a little something here. I like to play. You have the gold jacket, as we say. I shoot my mouth off. I recklessly speculate. But, of course, you're in there. You know what it takes to get there. I like to play a little game, Hall or Nothing. As we get into it, though, let me ask you this. I brought this up in November and December and January of the past season. People love whoever the duo that's dominating at the corners there. You hear a lot of that's what the Patriots were doing in the postseason. They just could put Revis out there on an island and let him alone. I always hearken back to me the gold standard. Maybe that's when I grew up, but you and Lester Hayes locking down the Smurfs from DC there. When you hear people praise Richard Sherman and that great secondary, is there a part of you? I can tell you're a modest guy, but is there a part of you like, hey, don't forget what we did to that so-called unstoppable offense back in the 80s?
Absolutely, there's always a little bit of that. So you know, it's one of the things that I have to think about. I'm forced to in other ways. You know, when people say he's the greatest, you know, like Dion, I go, wait a minute. You know, I just can't help it. And I'm saying, why are they saying that? You know, is it PR? What's going on? So, you know, one of the things that I've had a good fortune of doing is meeting these guys. They're great guys. I think they feel the same way. They understand. They're not out there for the most part saying they're the greatest. And if they are, they really know that there's a lot of guys that they owe that opportunity to.
If you're more comfortable leaving yourself out of the conversation, to me, you and Mel Blunt really were sort of pigskin doppelgangers. Once you put the helmet on, you cut that wiry 6'4" kind of figure.
I got to give a lot of kudos to Mel.
Yeah.
Because I was Rookie of the Year and I made the Pro Bowl as a rookie, I got a chance to meet the great Mel Blunt. We call him Soup, you know, for superstar. And at that Pro Bowl, I got the chance to talk to him. And so I'd say, so Mel, when do you start working out? And he goes, I take about a week off and I get right back into it. I'm like, wow. All the guys that I knew, they started in the summer, you know, June before training camp. So if not for that conversation, I would have been starting in June. But because of that conversation, I took a week off and I started training for the next season. And I think that benefited me well. You know, as a rookie coming in, if I had not made a Pro Bowl until my seventh year, you know, it would have been a little maybe too late.
Yeah.
So I had a good introduction to meeting him and opportunity to get off on the right track for me achieving a lot of the goals that I had set for myself.
It's a funny thing. You always hear bigger, faster, stronger with each passing generation. But really, you and Mel Blount, and by the way, I just saw him in Chicago, and not unlike yourself, you both look like you could go up and man a corner if you had to.
Yeah.
Both are still fit as can be. But it's funny that you guys are, you know, 70s, 80s guys, and you're bigger. You cut bigger physical figures than just about anybody, save maybe Richard Sherman and I guess Antonio Cromartie. But, I mean, the skill set a little greater. No disrespect to those guys, right?
Yeah. I think that, you know, the bigger corner has always been the prototype. A lot of people will say that I was. No, it was before me they were looking for big guys. Mel, they were looking for bigger guys before Mel. And it's very rare that you can find somebody that has great athletic ability, good quickness, great leaping ability, that's 6'2", 6'3", you know, on the corner. Mm-hmm. Usually those spots are reserved for wide receivers.
All right, let's get into it here. I guess that's a good place to start kibitzing. And we'll get into Richard Sherman and the rest. Like I say, the game we play, Hall or nothing. I'm going to give you a name. You have to assess as best you can, project out. If they finish in Canton, Ohio one day, we'll start off Richard Sherman.
Absolutely, no question.
Really? Definitely, yeah. Get into the Hall.
I'd say if his career were to end today, then I'd have to say no. I'm assuming.
Yeah, right, of course.
I'm going to assume that he's going to continue on the path that he's on.
Do you, by the way, so is Richard Sherman in the conversation top 5, 6 corners you've ever seen or not yet?
Not yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You, Mel, Deion Sanders, Rod Woodson in the conversation?
Absolutely.
Those the four? Am I on the right track with those four names? Well, and is Revis in that conversation yet?
Revis is in there too. I mean, it's really hard. It's really kind of hard to really say because the era has changed. You know, it's like even me in the era of today, I wish I was playing today. I would have had so many interceptions. It would have been so much fun, especially with the receivers being so tall. I know they're going to throw to those taller mm-hmm. guys and all that. I've always had a hard time saying who's number one and who's number 10. Let's put them in order. I'd need something else besides my opinion. It's too subjective. Deion, when he came out of college and I realized that he was a great PR guy, you know, mm-hmm. basically he started, you know, with his name, I'm prime time, I'm the best. And it brought a lot of attention. Well, if you know PR, which I didn't when I was playing football, he did by the time he mm-hmm. was playing football. That I could have said as a rookie, I'm number one. Even though Mel Blount and Willie Brown were still playing, I could have said, I'm number one. And people would have started saying, I'm number one, because that's what they read. Now, next, we got Mike Haynes coming up. He's the number one corner in the country. All right. Well, I didn't realize that that's how PR can work. And it really takes an educated fan to know that that's actually going on, that just because the guy says it in the interview doesn't mean that he actually is.
Oh, yeah. People say to me all the time, like, we, you know, play and pick up basketball.
Yeah.
I shoot my mouth off before the game. Then the game starts, and about 5 or 10 minutes in, all the guys I'm playing against are like, why were you doing all that talking? You're not good at all. And I said, well, if you take the talking away, what do I have?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. If I could just rest on my skills, then I could be you see?
Yeah.
But I don't have that benefit. I just all take away the jive talk, then, you know, then I'm just I'm nothing, you see?
Yeah, it can happen. It can happen. So it's really hard for me because I like to – like there's a defensive back. I won't mention his name. He said – he asked me how many interceptions that I had, and I told him, and he had about 8 more than me. And he goes, and you're in the Hall of Fame, so I should go in the Hall of Fame. I'm going, geez, that's the wrong criteria to judge a good defensive back.
That's right.
If you're super good, they're not throwing on you.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you would think a pro football player would know that.
Yeah, most of my time on the Raiders was Willie Brown talking to me on the sidelines, and Mike, I know they haven't thrown, but you stay ready. They're going to throw on you here sooner or later. The game would end, and then the next game would start. You know, that's just the way my Raider career went, where we played a lot of man-to-man. So – I didn't get a lot of opportunities. In college, I led the nation in my junior year with 11. I'm thinking, oh, shoot, next year I'm going to get 12 or 15. I only had 6 balls thrown on me that whole year, you know, and I got 3.
That's right. That really is something. And then Lester, the molester Hayes, right, on the other side, covered in stick'em.
Right.
Oh, did you ever stick'em yourself up?
No, because I was a really kind of a receiver, ended up playing defensive back a lot, uh-huh, like Richard Sherman. So I could catch. I didn't really have any trouble with that. And I didn't need it. And so I wish they didn't outlaw it, or Lester had the gloves like they can wear now.
Uh-huh.
He's just having such a fantastic career. But what a lot of people don't know about Lester, when he played youth football, he was a guard. He was an offensive,
wow,
lineman. And when he went to college at Texas A&M, they found out how fast he was. They made him a linebacker. And so he never played defensive back. So, like, I've had all those years of catching gazillion balls. Linemen don't get that opportunity. You know? So he's now starting to try to catch when he came into the NFL. And so that stick'em really helped him. Freddie Biletnikoff introduced him to stick'em.
Yep.
Of course, Freddie was really classy about it. He kept in a little pocket in his sock that he made out of the tape and just would reach down and put it on his fingers. Well, Lester put it everywhere, and the ball would sometimes stick to the back of his hand, stick to the side of his helmet. And that led it to it being outlawed.
I've had a long-standing hypothesis that, in fact, the Raiders just had a swimming pool filled with it, because some of the Raiders looked like they were just dipped their entire, yeah, body in it.
Yeah, well, you know, if it worked, I mean, for the Raiders back in those days, if winning was important to you, you'll do those kinds of
things. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I know plenty of my Pittsburgh Steelers were yeah, covered in the stuff as well. Speaking of the Raiders, though, Jim Plunkett, Hall of Fame?
Absolutely. I don't know why he's not in, you know. I'm basing it on his leadership ability, the teams that he led, the teams that we had, his impact, you know, in the NFL at that point. I think he should be in too.
I know. 2 rings? I don't understand what
he
lacks
there. How
about
Tom Flores?
Wow. Yeah, did I write? I thought I typed his name down. I didn't, yeah, type his name down. But, yeah, yes, Tom Flores also belongs in the Hall,
right,
of Fame. Those two. And what about Snake Stabler?
All
right. I threw that one out there as a test to just see, yeah, if you would say, yes, everybody belongs in the Hall of Fame.
No.
I like
it. Yeah. Well, I like Snake,
uh-huh,
you know, but, you know, 2 Super Bowls for Plunkett, you know. And how many does Snake get? 1,
mm-hmm,
right? And so it's just a little different, you know. It's a little different.
I remember Lester picking off Snake Stabler when he was with the Oilers,
yeah,
in 1980, the year you guys go to, yeah, the Super Bowl there and get to take down those, yeah, Eagles. Next up, Bob Greasy, yay or nay?
He's already in.
I know he's in the Hall, but if Jim Plunkett's not in with his 2
yeah,
rings,
yeah,
Bob Greasy threw 6 passes in the Super Bowl, or,
yeah,
4 passes, yeah, I think, in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
If they had it to do over again, do you think they might modify things a little bit?
I would like to think so. One of the things that we're trying to do is get the Hall of Famers an opportunity to vote, because we were.
Of course, it's crazy that you don't.
Exactly. We were in that era, so we know who should and who shouldn't, and have a good idea. And so what we're doing now is we are voting. We are taking the vote, Hall of Famers vote, and we're giving our votes to the voters. And I think that really has had an impact.
Certainly.
I really think that helped with Ray Guy for sure. And hopefully we'll continue. And maybe at some point they will let us have a real vote instead of the way it's working right now. But we're really happy with the fact that they're including our thoughts in their thinking.
I mean, it really is a great time, and if you've never been to Canton for one of those weekends, you really should if you count yourself as a pro football lover. But I agree with you. That's the one missing element.
Yeah.
You know, there's great reverence, of course, for the Hall of Famers, but yeah, you guys should get a vote to decide,
yeah,
who else who joins you in there.
Well, one of the things about the Hall of Fame, I'm not sure if you know this, but they do a lot of good things at the Hall of Fame. Every year we try to encourage guys to come back, and
yeah,
every year more and more guys are coming back, and the NFL and the American Urological Association, I don't know if you know this, they launched a program at the Hall of Fame for prostate cancer awareness. Are you aware of it?
I didn't know that the Hall of Fame didn't, but I certainly know all the good work you do with it, and I want to,
yeah,
talk with you at length about,
okay,
that. So, yeah, I definitely intend to get to that. Oh, look at this. Hold on. That's a good question there from our producer, David Singer.
Okay.
You'll cut this little bit out, though, but it's worth asking. Yeah, I do want to get to that in just a second.
Okay.
I want to talk to you about all your work there. One more name for you, Eli Manning, Hall of Fame, yay or nay?
I'd say yes, Hall of Fame career. I think he's had a Hall of Fame career. I don't know that I'd say he's a first ballot guy.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at all the guys that are playing right now, he has Super Bowls on his list. And, you know, the Giants have really won under him. So, yes, I'd say yeah. I think he deserves to be in. Like, you know, if you say Peyton, shoe-in. You know, Eli, I think he's in, but he's not a shoe-in. You know, it's a little bit different. That's just me.
Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, like you say, the two Super Bowl rings are one thing, and now at the back end of his career here, Victor Cruz and Odell Beckham, he's going to put up some big numbers, and they're probably going to help him get in.
Odell Beckham, I'm coaching youth football. Every kid on my team is an Odell Beckham fan. He got the haircuts.
Crazy.
They're like, throw me the ball. No, don't throw it there. Throw it over here so I could catch it like this. You know?
It's remarkable that an iconic play like that, really, how that can sort of, you know, go above, rise above the day-to-day and the play after play. Yeah.
He just raised the bar. You used to see, you know, maybe receivers catching with one hand or whatever. Now they're going for that exotic catch, you know. And one of the things I learned in college under Frank Cush, we had a great receiver there named John Jefferson, is that those catches don't happen unless you practice them. And Odell proved my associate, my former teammate, absolutely right. My teammate caught a ball against the University of Arizona at the end of our season. We had a perfect season. At the back of the end zone with his body parallel to the ground with, you know, diving. I've caught a million balls. I have never purposely dived to catch a ball. This guy, as a freshman, was running and diving and landing on the grass, no pads on, just practicing, just diving. I'm not at all surprised to see that Odell Beckham practices those catches, because that's the only way it happens.
I think he's going to take a run at, like you say, full disclosure, and Steelers fans may not like me admitting this, I had a Lester Hayes jersey. That's how much I liked all the stick'em and I liked the what that was all about. But I love John Jefferson as much. He and Lynn Swann are the most dynamic pass catchers football's ever seen. Maybe Odell Beckham joins them in that category going forward. But John Jefferson had some of the best I've ever seen.
I agree.
So you would that's quite a thing. I never connected that. You, in some big games, Chargers and Raiders played some big ones when you were around there. Were you so you would lock up on John Jefferson on occasion?
I've locked up on him. Actually, I've done a number on him. You know, see the difference. Here's the difference. I covered John Jefferson in college every day in practice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I think that that helped me have confidence that I can cover him. Just like I really like Steve Largent is another great wide receiver that he's in the Hall of Fame. But the first time I actually got a chance to cover him was in the Pro Bowl. So I got a chance to try and figure him out in practice. If I had met those guys for the very first time in a regular season game, it would have been a nightmare.
Uh-huh.
Because the ball's coming and you don't know their ability. So the ball's in the air, you might think, oh, that's not catchable. Ah, what happened? I just got beat. The guy just made a great one-handed catch. So, you know, experience is it shows that if you're fortunate enough to go against these guys when it doesn't count, it might help you when it does count.
Who was, I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, who was the toughest guy for you to try and lock down?
Harold Carmichael.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it was because of his height. You know, he wasn't going to run away from you super fast, but he could. He had that ability.
He was 6'8", right?
Yeah, exactly. And so when you look back and you're running with him and you look back, you're going, where the heck are they throwing that ball? You know, it's so high in the air. But, he was one of the toughest guys I've ever had to cover. And as many times that I know there's nothing I can do. So when he catches it, my only chance is to pull when he's pulling the ball down is to try and knock the ball out at that point. And we'd be on the ground laughing because he knows there's nothing I could have done, and I know there's nothing I could have done. And I'm laughing on the ground. I can't even get mad because there's nothing I could have done I could get mad at myself about, you know.
Big number 17. Remember watching him all through my youth as well. Good question here. So you were a teammate of Daryl Stingley with the Patriots when he gets injured against those Raiders. What was that day like? What do you recall from all that?
Well, that day was, you know, exactly that day. It was unsure if what was going to happen. So it was really the next couple of days when we realized that he was paralyzed and no one really knew how he was going to come out of that, that it became an issue. To be honest with you, I almost quit playing football at that point.
Hmm.
And football actually changed for a lot of people. That whole situation changed for a lot of people, and I was one of them. Because then when I was playing, really – If you ask me, I would say I'm trying to do that. You know, I'm trying to knock the
sure
out of this guy, you know. But I never did. But then I finally saw that what could have happened. And I would have been a guy if the ball was uncatchable. I would have been a guy that was making the hit on the guy, you know, because that was the way I was taught, one, and it made total sense to me. You want him to know if it was thrown, you were going to hit him. So he wants – next time maybe he'll short arm that ball. That was the way I was taught to play. Mm-hmm. Well, that injury pretty much changed me. And I almost retired. I almost quit playing football. And it wasn't for other players on other teams, not even my own teammates, but other players from other teams calling because they had heard about it, saying, hey, look, Mike, you know, football's a tough game. We expect big hits. Just keep them clean and just help us up. You know, you don't have to. Because I was, you know, I was going through a lot of stuff in my life at that point, and that was a straw. That, mm-hmm. You know, I could have gotten out of the league. So it changed me forever. I was a much better football player in terms of the opposing team. Because before, whenever I hit a running back, I was trying to knock him out. Mm-hmm. I wasn't trying to just bring him down. I was like, geez, maybe I'll be the guy that gets him out of the game. And it wasn't until really much later, like when I got the job and work in the National Football League office. And actually, the Patriots, on the very first game of the year, Tom Brady had his knee blown out
sure.
by a player. And Gene Washington, who was working in the league office, we'd watched the film. And he goes, Mike, that's a total legal hit. I said, well, Gene, it should be illegal. It should be an illegal hit. If that's legal, it's got to make it illegal. And the league started to change and make it a much safer game. And when you look at guys now, like I'm 61, you know, and when I look at guys that played in my era before and some even after me, and you look at their health and you realize, well, that was the way the game was. And do I want my son playing? I do want my son playing, but I don't want him to play if there's that kind of a football game.
Boy, that really fascinating stuff and instructive for today's players that you could take at the level you were playing at and make a right turn in your style. You know, a lot you hear some players bemoan, this is the way I've been taught. How can I make an adjustment? This is all I know. If Mike Haynes could do it, certainly today's players can.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And actually, I've actually talked to the commissioner about that.
Hmm.
You know, I say you need to bring back tackling. You know, I actually try to get him to make the field wider because, you know, when I came to the National Football League in 1976 on the Patriots, I might have been the fastest guy on the team with a 4.4. Now there's probably 30 guys on the Patriots that run 4.4, you know. Some are even linemen and linebackers. And so why is the field the same exact size that it was back then? In Little League Baseball, they don't play on the same size baseball field as the major leaguers. The NBA's basketball court isn't the same size as my high school, you know. So, but why is it that my 11-year-old son plays on the same size football field that the pros
right,
play on.
Right, yeah.
So, and because of that, the guy's so big and fast, the field is smaller in a sense, you know. So what if we made it a little wider? Then it gives that little wide receiver more of a chance to make a move and go up the field. So now you got to bring back tackling.
Mm-hmm.
And guys have to run, break down, and make a tackle.
Boy, that's a keen idea. Here, let me throw this one at you. I think the game's gotten away too much from the guys who created it. They didn't anticipate guys could kick field goals from 57 yards, and they do it with such efficiency, too. They do it at such a high percentage. I say we go back head-on kicking only, and in order to be eligible to kick in a football game, you have to play 5 downs from the line of scrimmage. That's a great idea.
Okay.
You don't like that one?
No, it's not I dislike it. I need time to think about
it. That's
a little
great idea.
Yeah.
Now we'll start seeing too much with the it's a 45 yards. Oh, our guy will make make the field goal with the greatest of ease. Not when you were playing, that wasn't the case.
Well, we had a pretty good kicker. You know, 45, yeah. We actually, I think our coaches expected our kicker to.
Who'd you have, Chris Barr?
No, for the Raiders, yeah. We had Chris Barr. Before that with the Patriots, I had John Smith. Both those guys
could lefty.
Kick. Yeah. They could kick. And so that
bring out the snowplow for him.
That should be a gimme.
All right, Mike Haynes.
You remember that snowplow game?
Oh, I remember that. I remember that. I tweeted that out for the kids. I said, listen, the Patriots, if you think that the gamesmanship is just 21st century stuff, no. Take a look back at what happened in Foxborough back in the early 80s there.
Yeah, but you know what a lot of people don't realize about that is if the Miami Dolphins had been able to get the ball close enough, we would have done the same for them. We'd have cleaned off the field for them. They didn't get it close enough.
Yeah, right. I'm not buying it. All right, let's talk about, like I say, all the good stuff you're doing there. You're not just in the Hall of Fame, but you're also a cancer survivor. We talked with you, I think it was 2 years ago, you called in to the show and we talked about it then. Talk to us about all the your ongoing good work there, and specifically Know Your Stats.
Well, one of the things that this gold jacket gives me a chance to talk about is a little bit about football, but also about a cause that's important to me. And, you know, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer based on what started with at the Hall of Fame, where the NFL and the American Urological Association had partnered up to do free screenings for players. They don't do screening anymore, but they do awareness campaigns, and they just get guys enough information to have a better outcome of their health. And so what I go around doing with the help of a lot of other gold jackets is trying to get guys to go have a conversation with their doctor about their prostate health, know their own stats, know what's going on in their own family. My grandfather died of prostate cancer, but I was totally unaware of it. And I didn't know, even if he did have it, that means that I'm likely to have it as well. The stat now that we are quoting is 1 in 7 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer in their lifetime. When you compare that to 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, why is it that we all know about breast cancer and no one knows anything about prostate cancer? Most men I talk to, they don't even know where the prostate gland is. Mm-hmm. Do you know where it is?
I guess I don't.
Yeah, see what I mean?
Deep inside.
It's inside. And I had been diagnosed with prostate cancer before, probably a month before I finally said, where is it anyway? You know, I didn't even know. And so I don't know why that is about us, you know, about men, but we're trying to change that. And so, you know, if you're African American, there's a 1 in 5 chance that you're going to get it in your lifetime. If it runs in your family, there's a 1 in 3 chance you're going to get it in your lifetime. So those stats, when I heard those stats, I had to talk to my doctor. And that conversation led him to looking at my chart. On my chart, he saw that I did have a rise in my PSA, and so he recommended a biopsy and found out that I had it. So I want to make sure other men don't find out the way I found out. You know, by
and as you say, as long as you screen early on, it's an imminently curable form of cancer.
Yeah, well, we don't like to use the word screen early. It's just, it starts with actually talking with your doctor early and letting him, you know, hey, my grandfather died, or my dad died, or it runs in my family, mm-hmm. you know, because a lot of people think that, you know, you got to be an old man before it happens. I've talked to guys that have been diagnosed with prostate cancer in their 30s. And then when they found out, because they're so young, they didn't do anything. They found out they were at the last stage. You know, that was they didn't make it. But if they knew a little bit more about it, about the symptoms, knew if it ran in their family, maybe it'll make a difference. And so that's what our campaign is about. We're asking people to take a pledge, go on our website, take a pledge, and help us with this awareness campaign. Every year in September, I ask other survivors, tell somebody. I've heard so many stories. I can't even tell you, Dave. It runs in a family. The father died of it. The older brother had surgery because he had it, but he found out early enough. The younger brother now gets diagnosed with it. The older brother never told him he had it. So the younger brother gets it, and he finds out it runs in families. He calls his older brother and says, hey, I want you to know it runs in families, so I have it, so there's a good chance you might get it. He goes, oh, I had the surgery 2 years ago. Never called his younger brother. So what is it about men that we keep this stuff to ourselves? We don't tell anybody. And a lot of people say they don't tell anybody because they think, and they don't ask about it, is because of the erectile function, you know, dysfunction, that kind of a thing. But they're having so much better success with those kinds of issues, incontinence and everything. If you catch it early when it's treatable, good chance you're going to be totally fine. Not just, you know, without cancer, but even everything else still working. So that's been my case, and I want to make sure I get that out there, that, you know, my sex life is just the way it was before I had prostate cancer. I didn't realize when I first became a spokesperson that everyone thought that I didn't have that sexual function working anymore. So I'm trying to make it perfectly clear.
I see, you got it.
It's working, yeah. But I'm lucky also.
Yeah.
A lot of guys are not, but your chances are enhanced if you if you find out early when it's treatable.
Either way, yes. Know Your Stats is the website as well as the catchphrase that is important to know from the Urology Care. See, now that is a hard word to say. Urology Care Foundation. KnowYourStats.org. Mike Haynes, what a great pleasure to speak with you. Real quick, two fast questions. Patriots old logo, Pat Patriot, or Flying Elvis, which is the better?
I'm kind of partial to the old one.
Of course. Anybody with any sense of style is. The Flying Elvis is silly. The other question, this is a good one. This is a righteous cause that I've undertaken. We have to name the NFL MVP trophy. It can be named after anyone in pro football's history. Who should it be? Wouldn't that be cool? The Heisman Trophy. Yeah. Everybody knows what that looks like. A lot of people don't know John Heisman, but they might ask questions about who he is because of the cool trophy. NFL MVP. Who should it be named after?
Who is your vote?
Well, I love the swagger of Namath. I think that would be pretty cool. As a Steeler guy, nothing more iconic to me than Jack Lambert, but I don't know if they'd go for that one. Mean Joe would be cool, though. Walter Payton, although he's already got the Man of the Year, but a cool horizontal Walter Payton flying through the air would be a nifty-looking trophy.
How about Jim Brown?
Okay, I'll go with that one.
You know what? There's quite a few guys that I've met over my lifetime, and none has really impressed me in football the way Jim Brown has. And I'd be honored to have that trophy with his name on it.
The Jim Brown Trophy, yeah. See? Tell that one to the commissioner. He might like that. He won't care if I call him.
Yeah.
Who are you? But you. He'll take your call. All right, listen. Like I say, Mike Haynes, we really appreciate it. It's great to have an extended conversation with you that really I could spend the next 90 minutes reminiscing about old games with you and watching you play and do your thing. In the meantime, though, the Urology Care Foundation, Know Your Stats. Again, knowyourstats.org is where you go, and important stuff on Twitter, at Know Your Stats, on Facebook, so on and so forth. Mike Haynes, good work there, and good work in pro football and college football. ASU, I didn't know you played with John Jefferson.
Oh, yeah.
Learn something new every day. Thanks for the time, man.
All right, thank you.
Dave, dee-da-da-da-da-don't-don't, Dave.
There he goes, the great Mike Haynes. I'll pull the curtain back. After we just ended that interview, we talked for another 15 minutes. He had even more good stories about John Jefferson, how Mike Haynes made the switch from wide receiver to John Jefferson because John Jefferson was so good. There was more of a calling for a corner at ASU back in the day, and that's how he wound up there, how pro football's history might have been different. He also told a great story about Jack Tatum, the so-called assassin. Yes, Tatum wrote the book, They Call Me the Assassin, or They Call Me Assassin, and I guess that put a little stink on Tatum. You know, that didn't do him any favors. But Tatum regretted. Mike Haynes resented Tatum, and I didn't want to bring that up to him. I didn't know if that was a sore subject. But he told us after the fact that, in fact, Tatum and Haynes, when they finally kibitzed in the early 80s, he said, why didn't you go and visit Stingley in the hospital? He said, I wanted to. I was advised against it. I wanted to, but I did talk to him in later days, but nobody knows about that. Now both Stingley and Tatum are gone, and so nobody can write the record there for those two guys, but I guess that's sort of what we're doing here.
And it's
right
amazing.
Now, but a cool, but man, I can't get enough of those old football stories.
I'm with you. It's amazing that a Hall of Famer almost retired because of that moment.
Oh, that's what he's saying. Mike Haynes.
Right.
Yeah. Almost hung it up.
That's just a great story, a great insight into to a dark moment for sure.
All right. Well, listen, good stuff. Hope you enjoyed it, everybody. I love, if nothing else, you're indulging the likes of me. If you're a youngster out there and you don't care as much about pro football history, hopefully Mike Haynes put a hook into you to make you go back on YouTube or wherever else and look up some of those great games. I know on NFL, if you go on YouTube and you look at NFL, you can find the old Super Bowls there, and you can find, including all the other ones, Super Bowl 18, when Mike Haynes and Lester Hayes shut down the high-powered D.C. offense helmed by Joe Theismann and whip those skins in 18. All right, so let's wrap it up there, Porn Tie. We'll call it a day. We'll do another podcast this week, I think.
Right.
How's that strike your fancy?
It does it well.
It's June. We still burn the midnight oil. We do two a week. We'll talk to you later in the week. In the meantime, thanks to Mike Haynes and thanks to you, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.